At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Wednesday, May 8th, 2024 edition. I'm Justin Klein, and I'm joined, as always, on this Wednesday by Luke Guerrero. Exciting day in the markets today, Luke. The S&P was basically flat.
So sometimes lack of excitement is the thing that keeps us young.
There we go. Yeah. So not that much interesting news in today's market, but, you know, some days are like that. But whether there's a lot of news or not, we are still here to unpack kind of the broader trends. And those are most important. Everyone gets kind of caught up in the minutiae and they want that volatility and action. But ultimately, making money, making good decisions with your money is about the medium and long term, not just what happens from day to day. And that's what we're here to help you do, unpack the proper data and perspective that will help you make consistent decisions, consistently good decisions with your money. And, you know, it's about the mindset, the right mindset, not chasing the hot sectors or stocks. It's about finding good quality businesses with good fundamentals. And we're going to unpack the market performance for today, as well as run down the show topics. But as usual, we're going to hit our first caller question now.
Hello, my name is David from San Jose, calling regarding KeyCorp Bank. I had it for a while. It's been doing good for me, but I want to know if it's a safe stock to hold all the bank buyouts. Look forward to your answer. Thank you.
All right. Looking at KeyCorp, this is a decent sized bank. It's been around a long time, about a $14 billion market cap. But Luke, their fundamentals are struggling. Last four quarters, revenue growth has been down in the low to high teens every single quarter. 2 quarters ago, earnings were down 92%. Last quarter, earnings were down 33%. So certainly struggling, as a lot of regional banks are. Now, this is a regional bank, but it has 972 branches across 15 different states, headquartered in Cleveland, Ohio. Is it large enough to withstand the problems that the regional banks have been saddled with over the past year or two?
I'm trying to see, do you see what its total assets are? It looks like it's $189 billion.
Okay.
That's pretty large to you.
So yeah,
if that's the case, I mean, it's outside of the kind of the sweet spot of where I would worry about it from both a regulatory perspective and a risk perspective, right? Because things that tend to be in that 10 to 50 million in assets are the ones that have been at the most risk because they're outside the regulatory purview of the Fed, and also they're more sensitive to more sensitive to some of those duration risk bonds that we saw bring down some regional banks back in March. Now, taking a look at it, it looks like cash flow has been falling over the past year. Profitability has been falling as well. I think I'm less worried about the risk associated maybe with what's on its balance sheet and more with kind of those shrinking margins that you've been seeing with this specific bank. What are you seeing from a technical perspective?
Well, technically, they broke down during the banking crisis last spring. It was trading around $18 per share, hit a low of around $8 or $9. And then now it's up to about 14. But my worry is that they haven't been able to recapture that level from pre-crisis. Despite all of the BTFP programs and things that the Fed has put in place to help banks like them, they haven't been able to recover that level. So that's what worries me. Earnings are down from $2.62 in 2021 to only 89 cents last year. So it's to bounce back to $1.15 this year. That's some progress, but still well below its all-time high in earnings. You're right, it's big enough, I think, to skirt any major issues, but I just don't love the earnings trajectory, and I would just move on. I think there's better use for your capital. We like the finance space, just not a lot of these small and mid-sized banks. So it's a mid-sized bank, and I would just move on. I think in the banking sector, it's pretty clear that it's going to be a winner-take-all over the long term. Those bigger banks, the JP Morgans, Bank of America's, Wells Fargo's of the world, they're going to continue to hoover up assets, and that's going to make these type of banks more challenged. And so I would certainly move on. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes. Our main focus point is about the AI hype, and is it overhyped in the short term? But is there potential long term? I think absolutely. We're going to dig into some comments from one of the heavyweights in our industry, Stanley Druckenmiller, and what he said in the most recent interview. We're also going to touch on a few other topics. One is in regards to profits. We are mostly through earnings season, and guess what? It's gone fairly well. One of the best quarters in nearly 2 years. So we're going to unpack that data. Also, capital gains tax exemption on your home. And because prices are up so much, a lot of people are now profiting far more than that $500,000 exemption. And a lot of people don't even know about that $500,000 exemption and what allows you to qualify for it. So we're going to dig into that. And then if we have time, Berkshire is going through a transition period. Charlie Munger, unfortunately, passed away recently. And Warren is not a spring chicken either. So what comes after Warren? You know, he's 93, you know? How much longer does he have? We shall see. But, we're going to dig into that and see, you know, will Berkshire still have the same type of performance post the Buffett era? We also have some voice bank questions. One is in regards to the materials sector, XLB, and then limited partnerships. And, of course, comments from our YouTube channel and questions that come in that comment section. And most importantly is your finance and investment questions at 888-99-CHART. We encourage you to call right now. Now we're heading to a short break. On the other side, we'll answer a live call from here locally, just one city south of me in Dana Point, California. And we're going to unpack the market activity for the day as well. But you can call anytime. Leave your questions on the Invest Talk Voice Bank at 888-99-CHART.
When listener questions are played on the Invest Talk podcast,
how do you guys determine a value stock?
The caller voices are amplified many thousands of times.
Just wanted to get your opinion on JP Morgan and BAC.
How do you see this looking forward?
I'm 25 years old and have a question about retirement funds.
And the unbiased answers from Justin Klein.
That's why it's trading so cheap, because there's a lot of regulatory risk here.
And Steve Peasley.
I kind of like it here. If I was going to buy Tyson Foods, this is where I'd buy it.
Benefit the entire InvestTalk community.
Thank you for what you guys do.
That's why 24/7, rain or shine, no matter how simple or how complex, your questions make a difference.
Symbol BKE, what's your outlook?
And InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART. Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go talk to Jordan. He is in Dana Point, California, and he wants to talk about savings accounts. How are you doing, Jordan?
I'm doing all right. How are you, Justin?
Doing well. What's your question about savings accounts?
So currently I have some money in a money market account. Looking to buy a home. Obviously, that's a tough market here in Southern California. I'm currently renting, first-time home buyer. It's looking like I'm going to get a job outside of the state, to an area I'm not very familiar with, so me and my family are probably going to rent the first year. So with that being said, I'm wondering if there's a good savings account to allocate the money that's meant to go for a home, other than like a a money market account. Currently, I have all my money in a Marcus account, mm-hmm. just because I want that money to be liquid. But if I know that we're going to be renting for another year, then I'd like to keep that money safe while getting a good return.
Yeah, well, Marcus, and for everyone else out there, Marcus is by Goldman Sachs, and it's their kind of consumer lending division. But you can also deposit some cash with them. And I think the yield right now is 4.4%, I believe, somewhere in that range. And you can also access that through Apple. Apple kind of partnered with them. You have the same rate there. In your Apple wallet, you can deposit cash in there and get a return. And that's pretty good. And for convenience purposes, right, that is a fantastic way to go. Now, you can reach for a little higher yield and try to get into short-term treasuries, buying like an ETF that invests in short-term treasuries. And there you can get closer to 5.25%, 5.4%, somewhere in that range. And obviously, both of those are going to float. I think Marcus actually dropped their rate a little bit recently by about 10 basis points. So they all float a little bit. It just depends how convenient you want it to be. Marcus is just very convenient to get in and out, which is nice. Whereas if you go buy an ETF, then it's going to have to settle and you might not get that cash for a couple of days if you want to sell it. So it's kind of up to you how convenient you want it to be for you. But you certainly could do a little bit better than the 4.4% on Marcus. But, you know, that's still a pretty good rate. That makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, I don't want to expose it to the market. So, yeah, even like an extra 1% or 0.5% is a good return on, you know, a six-figure savings account. So,
yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. And remember, an ETF can just be invested in short-term treasuries. There are those that are out there that are just investing in very safe instruments. So just because it's quote-unquote in the market or in your brokerage account or an ETF doesn't mean that's at risk. It depends on what type of fund that really is. Now, let's talk a bit about the market today. I talked about at the top of the show, Luke, kind of a boring day, very flat. Small caps underperformed, down about 40 basis points there. Did you see anything else besides the big moves in Uber and Shopify?
Yeah, nothing really except to say that, you know, there's not much going on this week. I talked about it on Monday. I imagine you talked about it yesterday as well. The market's more in waiting for CPI and PPI data. The only large cap company or really mega cap company that's yet to report is NVIDIA. Their earnings is scheduled for the 22nd of May. And also next week, you should get some more big name retail earnings, which could tell us more about the strength of the consumer, certainly in the last quarter, if not for the rest of the year. So it just seems to me like it's the path of least resistance, low volume, low liquidity, mm-hmm. just trading and taking up bets in the wake of, or rather ahead of the inflation data next week.
Yeah, we have consumer sentiment on Friday. It could be a market mover, but probably not that much. We are technically into some resistance here. Right around, let me pull it up, the 5,200, call it, on the S&P. So it's not going to tackle or break out to new highs without, I think, a little bit of a consolidation period. We do have OPEX next week, which oftentimes that creates a little bit of volatility. And then you have quarterly OPEX in the month of June, and that can bring extra volatility as well. But if you look at the VIX, you look at the MOVE Index, there aren't a lot of indicators that volatility is ready to jump dramatically without some sort of catalyst. And being in through earnings season, through the Fed announcement, et cetera, kind of a boring market right now, but sometimes boring is good. Now you probably noticed that we are fielding questions from the comment section in our YouTube channel, YouTube videos. So let's pivot over to one right now. Carter Erickson says, I'd like to know if you think BLD stock will be a good long-term hold. BLD, this is a mid-cap, about $12.6 billion, and they provide installation services to the construction industry with 240 branches in the United States. So you'd imagine they're going to be fairly well correlated with the building industry, new homes. That's probably mainly their customer. And as you would imagine, if you look at the stock chart, they're pretty correlated with the ITB, which is the home builder ETF. It's pulling back a little, but earnings are expected to be up 10% this year, 5% next year. What are you seeing on profitability and balance sheet, Luke?
Yeah, well, taking a look at their income statement growth, if you will, the revenue, it looks like over the past 5 years has an annualized growth rate of 17%, which looks impressive until you dig in and you realize most of that came from 2021 to 2022, right? When people were remodeling homes, maybe that's another customer base for this company. But regardless, growth has kind of tapered off a little bit. It's only set to barely grow into next year. And margins have kind of remained the same, though, 11% in 22, 11% in 23, supposed to gain a little bit to 12% this year. Fundamentally, it doesn't look terrible. And from a relative valuation perspective, it's a little bit overvalued at about a price to book of 5.2, but nothing that really jumps out to me as being something that I would hop into immediately.
Yeah, I would wait on it. It's a good company, but I think it needs a bit of more of a pullback, maybe into the low 80s. That's where I'd pick it up. All right, we're heading to a break. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Got two for the price of one. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are here, and they're taking your finance and investment questions now. 888-99-CHART.
Now, today's focus point is about not just about AI and is it overhyped, but a broader interview with Stanley Druckenmiller, a titan of our industry. And he doesn't do a lot of interviews. I would say I see one every quarter, roughly, maybe every 6 months. And he opines on a lot of things, from both what's happening in broader markets, different sectors, as well as Fed policy and government spending, et cetera. So he talked about a lot, but the biggest takeaway for, I think, the average investor is that he trimmed his stake in NVIDIA, basically saying it's a bit ahead of its skis, that a lot of the expectations for AI, which he frankly saw well before the move, is pretty much priced in here. But what's interesting is his basically saying that it's a little overhyped right now, but in the long term, it's underhyped. Would you go that far, Luke? Say it's underhyped long term?
It could be. I mean, if you think back to what's probably the best analogy for this, which is how people perceived the internet in the dot-com bubble, sure, prices were pretty heavily overvalued heading into 2000, 2001. But I don't think anybody fully appreciated the scope to which the internet age would have and touch every single company, from, you know, hotels to completely fundamentally changing retail commerce. So this technology does have the ability to have that kind of effect in the long term. But again, I say this all the time here, that when people talk about artificial intelligence, what we have now isn't artificial intelligence, right? What we have is mostly just models and neural nets that are operating in a way that they have for a long period of time, going back to early 2010s. But on a larger scale. And so because to most people it's new, they extrapolate forward a little bit. And I think that's what he's saying right here, is in the short term, people are extrapolating this far beyond what its capabilities are going to be, and extrapolating the effect of it far beyond what that's likely going to be as well. But I do agree that in the long term, it could be the case where people are under anticipating the effect it's going to have in across industries.
Yeah, and I agree with that sentiment. And also, even within the tech space, the AI space, there are a lot of parallels you can take from that period of the late 90s when you had the dot-com bubble 1.0. Everyone was excited about just the deployment of the internet itself. And one of the darlings, one of the main darlings of that era was Cisco. And we talked many times about how that ran up dramatically, and it's still not back to where it was, and their business still did well, but there was so much expectations built into the price at that point that they almost had no chance of achieving that level of growth, as opposed to, you know, a company like Amazon, which, you know, it also did very well during that time and hit a high, split adjusted, I'm looking at the chart, of around $5 per share, fell all the way to roughly 50 cents per share. So it went down, actually 30 cents per share. So it went down over 90% from its high. But obviously, even if you bought at the peak in 2000, you still did dramatically well, because you bought it at five, it's now at 188. So, you know, it's really about, there's going to be winners and there's going to be losers. And it's very difficult to say, okay, hey, NVIDIA, it might be the winner right now, but there's news about Apple trying to develop their own AI chip. And Google developing their own AI chip, and Intel as well, and AMD obviously competing with them. So, you know, will NVIDIA be that winner 5, 10, 20 years from now? You know, we shall see. But there's no guarantee that just because they're the winners today that they will continue to be the winners down the line as well. And I think it's a space that will evolve, and there'll be players that aren't even around today. Think of Meta, right? Meta was a huge winner of the internet, and they weren't around in 2000. Okay, so it's something that you have to continue to monitor, and don't be married to any one position, just like Druckenmiller isn't either. Now, one other big takeaway I got from that interview, Luke, was really when he talked about government spending and how they've obviously governments have gone overboard with their spending, and they were right initially, but they took that too far, and they continue to take that too far. And in addition, he talked about the Fed and how he felt that they were in the right place back in the fall, and then they pivoted, and that kind of loosened policy too much, financial conditions too much, and it also allowed inflation to kind of start to creep back up here in the first quarter, and that's what you've kind of seen. So what are your thoughts on those comments, and do you differ from those sentiments?
I think it's difficult to draw a conclusion when you're still in the moment. I think certainly it could be the case that the government went overboard and the Fed has moved a little bit too early on turning dovish, and that could be the root cause of what could possibly be a resurgence of inflation. But I do think that probably, because it is a common sentiment out there, right, that the government is spending too much money and that's probably driving inflation, or the Fed is driving inflation by easing rates as well. But I think that the problem is generally speaking, real pivots don't happen until something breaks. And it seems to me like the Fed has been trying to break something, and the government has been trying to break something, but nothing's really broken yet. So until there's some deterioration, I think it's too early to say if too much has been done or too little has been done.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the Fed always tries to, I don't want to say they try to break something, but they certainly try to tighten financial conditions in order to get inflation in order. I think what happened was is they actually did break something. They broke the sovereign debt markets. You see that with the Bank of Japan, JGB market, the gilt market back in 2022. And so, you know, the issues are more on the sovereign level, but they also don't want those things to spiral out of control, because that's even much worse than, you know, some sort of minor banking crisis last fall. So that's what's happening right now, and we'll see how this evolves through the end of the year. But interesting comments from Stanley. Now we're heading into a break. Ready for your calls now at 888-99-CHART.
Let's say you've been thinking about learning a new language. Okay, why? I mean, how would it come in handy? And where would you want to use it? Could it be that you have an upcoming international trip? Or maybe you want to connect with family members or friends from a different culture? I think you should know about Rosetta Stone. With millions of users, it's been the world's most trusted language learning program for 30 years. Rosetta Stone is available on your desktop or as an app with audio companion and the ability to download lessons offline. Rosetta Stone truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. It has a built-in, patented speech recognition engine called True Accent. So as you practice speaking, you'll get feedback on how well you pronounce words. With Rosetta Stone, you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's an intuitive process designed for long-term retention. You really learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. Rosetta Stone is an amazing value, so your special skill set is within easy reach. You know you want to do this, so don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, InvestTalk listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off now at rosettastone.com/today.
In today's market, more than ever, you need unbiased investing guidance because it can help you achieve financial freedom. Well, you've come to the right place. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin and Luke. Hope you're having a good day. This is Matt from Minneapolis. I have a question for you gentlemen, please. I hear you talking a lot about materials is a great sector to be in right now. I found these two ETFs that I'm considering getting into, and I was wondering if you had a preference on one of them, please. One of them is XLB, which is a materials fund, I believe, and the other one is VAW. They both seem to have pretty good holdings and paid dividends, of course. I was wondering if you guys had a preference in which one you would get into or if both of them are about equal. Thank you for your help. I'll be sure to listen on the show to hear your answers. Have a great day.
All right, looking at two materials ETFs, XLB and VAW. XLB has a 9 basis point expense ratio. VAW has 10. So I would say very negligible difference in their fees here. Their top holding is still the same, though. Lind, L-I-N-D, L-I-N is the symbol, 20% for XLB and 16, nearly 17% for VAW. It looks to me, Luke, like there's a lot more holdings in VAW, a lot more broad-based. It also looks like it skews a little smaller as well. What are you seeing?
Yeah, well, that's because VAW is going to be based on the MSCI USA IMI, which is the total market index, and they're going to do that on market cap weight, whereas XLB is going to be based on large caps, right? It's going to be materials within the S&P 500 and then weighted based on market cap there. So for one more basis point with VAW, you get about 20% exposure to mid caps, 3% to small caps, whereas XLB is, I believe, 96% large caps. So 94% large caps, 6% mid caps, and no small caps at all. So honestly, it seems to me like UAW, or rather VAW, would be a better choice just because that more broad-based market-like exposure gets you in some mid caps and some small caps as well.
I would agree. I think paying one basis point for that exposure makes sense to me. All right, now let's pivot over to the current earnings picture. We are mostly through earnings season, Luke, and basically it looks like the S&P is going to end up with about a 5.2% increase in earnings from the same period last year. And that's much better than the analyst expectations going into the quarter, which was 3.4%. And that marks the strongest growth in nearly 2 years. And what's even more unusual is that this quarter's earnings expectations also continue to march up. Usually, as you get into that next quarter, the farther out an analyst looks at earnings, the more bullish they are. And as you get closer to that quarter, they actually downgrade their earnings expectation. So what's interesting is that they're expecting still 9.8% earnings growth for this quarter. It's hard to see a situation where you have a broad market downturn with pretty solid earnings growth. What do you think?
I would agree with that on the top line, but you know, I think it'd be more interesting to note what percentage of that earnings outperformance is concentrated in tiny space, right? Is it concentrated within large caps? Is it concentrated within a single sector? I would think, based upon some things that I've seen, that small caps had been outperforming far less than their large cap counterparts, but that's certainly something I would need to look into. But I think one thing also that is a good takeaway from this earnings season, this guidance season, is that generally speaking, layoffs have been pretty low as well. I think coming into the year, people were talking about big tech layoffs and all these companies having layoffs. You and I were saying, well, these are companies that overhired during the pandemic, and now they find themselves in situations where they're just trying to right-size themselves. So I think coming into 2024, the potential for more widespread layoffs was a narrative that really hasn't borne much fruit as we're through 5 months of the year almost.
Yeah, and on the small cap side, I think one of the main reasons for the mild outperformance this year, or basically since February, is higher interest rates. They typically affect those smaller caps. But when it comes to the jobs picture, what's interesting is that among S&P 500 companies, the term recession has only shown up 100 times in earnings calls. And that's compared to 302 times in the first quarter of last year. This is the fewest amount of recession, with the word recession being used in 2 years. And so it's pretty clear that while everyone was kind of front running, oh, the Fed's raising rates, that's going to cause a recession, it's guaranteed a recession. That's kind of in the rearview mirror. And as business prospects continue to move along, they're not on fire, but they're solid. And you see indexes from CEO hiring and capital spending expectations; those are going up. The Business Roundtable Index of CEOs rose to the highest level in the first quarter since the second quarter of 2022. So really, since the early days of the massive Fed rate hike. So, this is why I say yesterday I talked about I don't know if you listened to the show yesterday. I talked about how the market is roughly fairly valued, and you have an economy that is not amazing, but it's still solid. And despite all the bear porn that you see out there and the headlines about everything going to hell in a handbasket, the actual numbers are pretty solid overall on profits and on the jobs front. So not a lot to worry about, right?
Well, typically when you say there's not a lot to worry about is when you start worrying about things. But I think to your point, the reason why there's been far less mention of recession in corporate comments at this point is because that's all they've been talking about for 18 months.
Yeah.
Is downturn, right-sizing, lowering costs, battening down the hatches. So you get to a certain point where, okay, none of this data is really boring out the fact that the consumer is losing their spending power, which they certainly aren't, because wage growth still looks good. Most of their debt is locked in on mortgages that are, below 5%, all these things that have led to a situation that is a little bit different than it has been historically. So, I don't think there's no risks out there, but certainly it seems to be that it was overblown over the past 18 months, just how risky it was from a broad-based recessionary perspective. And that's not to say that there aren't going to be pockets of contraction, right? There are always pockets of contraction. But overall, the economy looks pretty healthy.
Yeah, and that's what we're talking about here, because there are always anecdotes and headlines. You talk about different parts of the economy or markets that are weak. But broad-based, you're not really seeing that anywhere. All right, let's go and field another question from the Invest Talk YouTube channel. Matthew Bird, 86, says, I'd be interested in your view on OPCH, Option Care Health. They recently opened a partial position at these levels. I like the secular tailwinds around home infusion, and this seems like a good vehicle for exposure. One thing I'm unclear on is if it's exposed to the same utilization risks that have plagued Humana, CVS, and other managed care companies. All right, looking at OPCH, it is a small mid-cap name. Would you call it $5 billion? Is that small or mid? It's always kind of a nebulous definition, right?
Mm-mm. I mean, it depends. Most indices that do small cap indices have a tolerance band. So I'd say that's within the tolerance band of small caps.
Okay. Yeah, so this is, we'll call it a small cap, a provider of home and alternative site infusion services. It provides treatments for bleeding disorders, neurological disorders, heart failure, anti-infectives, and as well as chronic inflammation disorders, among others. So, we have a population of boomers that are aging into retirement, and some are aging into elder care, and there's probably some tailwinds here. And you're seeing that show up in earnings. Last quarter, revenue growth was 13%. Earnings growth, 24%. Pretty solid. The chart, however, leaves a lot to be desired. It hit a high back in, August, late August, around $35 per share. Now we're down around $30 per share. The technicals are kind of in a range. It's barely been in a range since mid part of 2022. So not a lot of headway there, no dividend at all. So you're not getting a dividend while you wait. What are you seeing on the fundamental front?
Well, from a relative valuation perspective, it might be a little overvalued. Its forward-looking PD is about 24, which within the healthcare space right now, the comment was asking about these utilization issues that other healthcare providers have faced. Probably reference to CVS, right? CVS had lower revenue than expected and higher costs, and that's because of the utilization of their insurance, right? And so that might be an issue here. Cash flow really started to drop off when that chart started to be in that downtrend at the end of 2023, as did the relative strength of this name. So as cash flow started to fall a little bit, though profitability stayed flat, it seems to me like the market was maybe expecting lower forward-looking earnings down the line.
Yeah. I don't get jazzed up about this name. Like you said, it's a little bit expensive. The technicals are kind of meh. The profitability is solid. Return on equity, 19%. Return on invested capital, 11%. That's decent. It doesn't have a lot of debt. That's good. But if I'm going based on cash flow, free cash flow yield is only about 3% with, you know, not gangbuster growth. I would just wait for a deeper correction with a better valuation. So name they have on the watch list and monitor, but it's not a buy for me at these levels. Thanks for the call. Now, 2024 is moving fast, and we're already into the fifth month of the year. Third of the year is gone. And so the big question for you as investors is, are you prepared? Are you prepared for the current market trends? Do you understand what trends, what sectors are leading, what sectors are underperforming, which sectors are too expensive, what sectors are cheap? Where are the opportunities in today's markets? Well, if you need a second opinion, you need to understand whether you are on path to your financial goals, I encourage you to reach out to us at KAPP Financial, where we provide unbiased guidance both on and off air, and we practice parallel investing, which means we invest right alongside our clients. So please take advantage of our free portfolio review assessment by heading over to our website at investtalk.com. Now let's keep moving and play another listener question. This one came in earlier from Oregon.
Hello, Steve, Justin, and Luke. This is Melissa from Oregon. Thank you so much for your show. And I'm sending my best wishes to Steve for his recovery. We're all missing him on the show. My question today is about limited partnerships. Why are some securities limited partnerships, and why do they generate different tax forms? Specifically, I own Energy Transfer, ticker ET, and Enterprise Products Partners, ticker EPD. And they have generated me different tax forms. I think it was a K-2. Is there a reason to avoid limited partnerships? My tax professional suggested that I sell them and avoid limited partnerships in the future. I was looking to see if you can give us your take on limited partnerships.
Yeah, there's definitely some downside to owning limited partnerships, and this is just the entity structure that they've chose to take on. And now one major drawback of limited partnerships is that income that you get, the nice juicy dividend yield for enterprise products partners, that's 7.25%. But that's not your traditional 7.25%. That you would get from, say, a Procter & Gamble or an AT&T or Verizon, et cetera. That is going to be taxed at your ordinary income tax rate, and that might be a high rate, it might be a low rate, depends on your situation. In addition, if you own it in a tax-deferred account, like a IRA, Roth IRA, 401k, et cetera, you aren't exempt from that, I think, after it goes above $1,000 per year. So you definitely want to avoid owning major stakes in any of those type of accounts. So those are kind of the main drawbacks there. I know a lot of these names, especially in the energy space, have started to move from the limited partnership structure back to a corporation. So hopefully they do that. Maybe you can buy them again then. But I would say, yeah, trying to avoid them makes sense for most people. It depends on what type of work you want to have, what type of taxes you want to have on those particular names. You get a K-1, which if you get any of those, you just give those to your tax accountant and they should be able to handle that. If they're complaining about it, Luke, maybe a new tax guy? What do you think?
No, you know, it's a form of registration for a company that essentially tries to get rid of the double taxation problem with C-Corps, right? So yeah. With C-Corps, you get taxed at the corporate level, and then distributions get taxed at the individual level. So one of the benefits of LPs is there's only a singular tax level, which could be a benefit, could be a cost, depending on your situation. But also the partners can allocate income gains, losses in a way that may be more advantageous for them individually. But it's complex, like you said. So if you want to stay away from the complexity and you just want to get some energy exposure, then maybe investing in a normal C-Corp is the way to go.
Yeah. There's something to be said about avoiding that double taxation, that's for sure. But there's also something to be said about simplifying your life and the life for your accountant as well. Maybe they don't want to do the work. I'm not sure. But something to think about. But thanks for the call. Now, on the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this question. Will GDP growth weaken until the Fed starts cutting interest rates? Some analysts project an optimistic economic forecast in the long run, but slow growth quarter over quarter for the rest of 2024. That kind of counters what Luke and I were talking about. We'll discuss that a little bit more on tomorrow's show. But for now, I'm Justin Klein with Luke Guerrero, and we're ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
I would really appreciate if you could give me an entry point for a company called Medtronic, MDT.
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART, or post your questions on the InvestTalk YouTube channel.
Investors, the goal of achieving financial freedom requires unbiased information, strategic planning, and determination. Congratulations! You've found the podcast that is dedicated to helping you succeed. InvestTalk.
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call. Mike here from Florida. I'm looking for your take on Unum Group, that is ticker symbol UNM. I actually purchased it back in 2021, and I'm up about 85%. Just seems to consistently reach new highs, but it is approaching what looks to be the all-time high, which makes me wonder if it's due for a little turnaround. Currently, it's about 2.5% of my portfolio. To me, it looks still like a good, solid company. PE looks good, earnings over $6, and they do pay that nice little dividend. I know you guys have access to way more information than I do. So could you let me know if I'm missing something which would indicate a reversal, at which point I would maybe decide to sell a little bit? Thank you, and I will be listening on the podcast.
Are you looking at Unum Group? Unum Group? I'm not sure how to say it, but UNM is the symbol, about a $10 billion market cap, so certainly right in that mid-cap space. They just announced, I guess last fall, they're repurchasing $500 million worth of common stock. That's 5%. Of the value of the company. That's a lot. But their business is doing well. It's approaching its all-time high, but it's also expected to earn an all-time high in earnings of $8.19 this year and $8.75 next year on a $52 stock. It looks pretty good to me. I see no reason to trim or sell his position unless he's drastically overweight. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, profitability has been trending in the right direction, as has cash flow. It looks like relative valuation is fine. It's trading at its book value. Nothing crazy there. Its momentum is pretty strong. Year to date, it's up 16%. Interestingly enough, in terms of outperformance, it has been in the negative 20 to 40 range relative to the S&P 500 every year, except for 2022, it outperformed by 86%. So it looks like that five-year annualized outperformance versus the S&P 500 of 7.5% was really just from 2022. Interesting thing to note.
Yeah, and I think that's because their profitability really perked up. Now, the big question is that because of interest rates, right? Because they're, if you look at the return on equity, it's now, you know, into the mid-teens, whereas before it was kind of around 10%. Remember, utility or these insurance companies, they take their premiums in and they go invest it. Now they can invest it at a much higher rate than they did before. So, you know, this is one of the reasons we like insurers, and I think it makes sense that they can keep this level of profitability going.
No, it certainly does. You know, it's returns are relative. I say that all the time. Returns are relative. And it was down about 80% going into mid-20. So certainly it seems as though they got the business headed in the right direction. Nothing seems too crazy in terms of overvaluation. I don't see, just because it's approaching new highs, which adjusted for inflation, it's not a new high, but just because it's approaching new highs doesn't mean it can't surpass new highs. So if there's no red flags, no yellow flags even, I don't see any reason to trim.
I agree. Let's talk a little bit about capital gains and capital gains on your home. And a lot of people don't know this, but you get a $250,000 exemption on capital gains in your home if you lived in it in two of the last 5 years. And last year, roughly 8% of homes sold brought a gain of more than that $500,000 that most couples get if they're married, filing jointly. And, you know, this exemption hasn't been increased since it was passed in 1997. Luke, if they adjusted it for inflation, that exemption would be up to $954,000 in today's dollars. So a lot of people are having trouble with this and saying, you know, I don't want to pay that tax because I'm going to profit maybe $600,000-$800,000. I'm going to have a big tax bill on that. Do you think that's a good way to look at it?
Well, I mean, there are other ways to avoid taxes as well, right? One is to consider how much you put into the home. Mm-hmm. So maybe you bought the house at $100,000. Now it's worth $700,000, which would be a crazy return. But it's not just the land that got you there. It's the improvements you put in there, right? Those are costs that you put into the house. So, you know, the tax man doesn't need to tax you on improvements that you put into the house. That's money you spent on improving the value of it. So that's another way that you can get beyond that exemption as well.
Yeah, it adds to the cost basis. So if, in your example, if they spent $100,000 on improvements to make the house better, their cost basis goes from 100 to 200. So for 700, now they're within that limit. So definitely something to consider and make sure that when you're thinking about selling your home, you keep an eye on this and keep your receipts for those improvements. And number one lesson, though, is don't think of taxes as the only reason to do something. So many people make bad decisions by trying to avoid taxes. It's one factor, but it's not the only factor. Well, that about does it. I'm Justin Klein, along with Luke Guerrero, and this completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play, and be sure to rate and review on iTunes. Also, head over to our YouTube channel and check out our podcast in video form. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.